Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Justin Chalupka, alongside Jason Poliev. Every show we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. I gotta say, right off the top, I'm pissed.
You're pissed.
I'm a little bit pissed off.
What has upset you?
My wife is at home, right now, watching in crystal clear, Blu-ray, high definition, The Avengers.
And
I'm here.
You're not able to keep the DVD?
Or
the
Blu-ray? I could be watching Hulk smash right now.
I understand.
Hulk probably is smashing right now.
I understand that. Is there no way that you can return after the show and watch the Hulk smash?
Yeah, but he's smashing right now.
I understand that.
But he's smashing right now.
The Hulk smash is a lot. Here, would you like me to hand you the Incredible Hulk from last week? You can watch the Hulk smash from last week's issue.
Not even a little bit.
The one that we actually have to apologize for, because last show the audio was so fuming messed up.
Yeah,
that
it got cooked horribly, horribly, horribly cooked. So,
and we were to the point we just were unable to release the episode.
Yeah,
and we apologize for people that were waiting for it.
Sorry about that, everybody.
So you don't get to hear about Hulk smashing.
Yeah.
Although, I don't think we discussed that very much at all.
No, not really. Okay. However, there is something I do want to discuss right off the top of the show before we get into comics or anything else.
All right.
Last week, it was announced that there's a very, very real possibility that there might be a bacon shortage.
Not a bacon shortage!
Yes. The price of pork bellies is increasing due to the economic woes and the farming catastrophes that have happened over the past year. So
they just can't raise enough pigs in England is basically what it
comes down to. So because of this, we're going to need a way to start stockpiling bacon.
What we have not discovered yet is whether or not this will actually affect Canadian bacon and other non-bacon forms of bacon.
Exactly. But I think I might have the solution.
There's a solution.
I was at 7-Eleven before I came here. As I am wont to do, because I was running
out of
gas.
Which is not usually a bastion for bacon, but...
No, but I have found the solution...
And prevents thinking about such things, because it will give you brain freeze while you're there.
Potentially. But I have found the solution, and this is it. I'm holding in my hands Wild Bill's Bacon Jerky.
It's bodacious.
It's bodacious is what it says.
At least that's the claim it makes.
I have no idea... How this is.
Apparently it's real bacon.
Yeah, that's what it says. So I'm going to hand
bacon
you
jerky.
This chunk of bacon jerky. I'm going to take a chunk of bacon jerky myself.
It doesn't look so much different from any other type of...
Yeah, it looks kind of like a thick
turkey
cut.
Jerky, beef jerky. It'd definitely be a thick cut bacon.
Yeah.
And
it's got that good smoky bacon smell to
it. Oh, it definitely has that bacon smell to it.
I'm going to seal this up and put it away, because I don't think either of us should be eating this.
No.
Just as a general person, I don't think anybody on the planet Earth should probably be eating this, but you and I are going to try this on air, and we're going to see if bacon jerky is any good.
So, all right, get a nice big bite in there, chew it up, taste it, move it around your mouth, get it on all those taste buds.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have that sweet, that smoky flavor that bacon is known for? Does it have that saltiness to it?
It actually does. This is actually not that bad.
So
I got the Slim Jim as a backup in case this sucked ass, but this is pretty good.
Well, Slim Jim's an entirely different flavor profile.
Well, yeah. Well, but it's a flavor profile I'm used to that if something sucks, I could go ahead and take a big, I could snap into a Slim Jim and get my fix, but this is pretty good. I'm willing to say Wild Bill's bacon jerky, not a bad idea. This could be our solution to the bacon shortage. We just turn it all into jerky and it can store for many, many, many moons.
Yeah, but the shortage is because we need it fresh and available, not that we're running out of, because we're actually running out of the pigs, not because we need to store it for a long time.
Well, by all means, every single pork belly coming into the country right now should be turned into jerky. That's what I'm saying.
No, they don't need to worry about that, because they have the ultimate storage solution for the jerky right now.
My stomach?
They keep the pigs alive. They don't slaughter the pigs until we need the bacon.
But see, that's still a short-term solution.
No,
because
it's not.
Pigs get old and die.
That's true, and that's when you can turn it into bacon for the most recent, for the most necessary.
Well, I don't know. If you have an old-ass pig that dies of natural causes,
the pigs are still alive.
Would the heart attack fuck up the meat because of the enzymes that are released post-mortem?
No. Don't need to worry about it. But more importantly, the pigs are still alive, which means the pigs can still be fucking. So you could actually be making more bacon by having more pigs.
Hmm.
That's the actual solution. Because if you run out of pigs...
If you're saving them for fucking, then you're not using them for eating, which means there's no bacon coming out of that pig.
Yeah.
For as long as they're fucking.
As long as they're siring. But eventually they're going
to
get old.
You just said siring because you didn't want to say fucking again, didn't you?
No, I actually wanted to say siring because that's the position that they're actually doing. Fucking is just the act that you do while siring. Siring is the actual act of mating animals to produce offspring. Siring is... Fucking you can do just for fun. And it is a lot of fun.
You were an FFA member in high school, weren't you?
Nope, was not. I did know a couple of kids that were Future Farmers of America, but I was not on FFA. Yeah,
I never was. They scared me. They would go to fairs to not ride rides. They went to fairs to actually like look at other animals, and that just
they were judging the animals. It's scary. Yeah,
that just doesn't jive with me. All right, so bacon jerky, our review, at least on my side of the table, thumbs up. Your side of the table.
If you want a jerky that tastes like bacon, thumbs up, definitely.
If you want a bacon that tastes like bacon, just go eat fucking bacon.
If you want bacon, what it loses, though, is one of the key factors of bacon that I really love.
Crisp.
That crispness.
Yeah.
That crunch that you get.
Some people like that nice chewy bacon, and this is right up that alley. If you like a chewy bacon, but you want it thick cut and have that chewiness to it, this is a good... This basically is just chewy bacon. I mean, that's really what it is.
Actually, it reminds me a lot. If you go to a salad bar that has real bacon on the salad bar, as opposed to bacon bits or bacos or whatever else they bacon flavor product they put on there to season your salad with, if they actually use real bacon, that's what it reminds me of because they usually don't make that as crunchy, and they just
If it is crunchy, it's usually bacos, which is soy, not actual meat.
Yeah, soy with bacon flavorings in it. Yeah, this is the actual meat. And it is chewy, so if you like a chewy bacon, it's definitely worth it. If you wanted a jerky product, because, it's more of that jerky texture. But
there's 150 calories in one serving. 110 of them were from fat.
Yeah. So
not a light snack.
Not only do I give a thumbs up if you want something bacon flavored, but I give a thumbs up if you want a heart attack.
Yeah.
If you want to kill yourself.
Yeah, there's six grams of saturated fat in one serving. Only 3 servings per container, so
this will be much tastier. Yeah, this will be much tastier than eating a bullet.
Yeah, so, just as effective.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So, all right. Now that we've gotten past bacon, we're rolling to the show.
But no, you're never past bacon. Bacon is eternal.
Well, until we run out,
or you have a heart
attack. Have to keep siring the pigs so we don't run out.
Right.
That may mean that we have to prevent them from being sold in market for a little while, but that just means that we have more bacon in years to come. Otherwise, we will run into the shortage and we'll have to throw them into deep freezer or have to get them. Yeah.
Well, I think you said the article that you shared with me was showing that the best estimation they were going by, I think, said that it would increase prices by like 10%. So bacon, I think now if you get like a package of bacon at the grocery store, something like, say, $3.50, and I'm sure overestimating. That means it'll go from $3.50 to $3.85. I'll pay an extra 35 cents for my bacon.
Whatever. And your wife will make you buy the turkey stuff
instead. Yeah, so I'll get turkey shit anyway, so it's not going to affect me anyways. That's what I get for trying to get healthy.
But when you go to that gourmet burger place and you get the bacon double cheeseburger,
yup,
you might wind up paying a little bit extra for that.
Ooh, I just realized tomorrow's a new month. That means BGR is going to have a new burger of the month. Yeah, I gotta go find out what is.
What was the burger of the month for this past month?
The Triple D burger.
Triple D?
Uh-huh. I don't remember everything that was on.
Dive and Dodge? What?
I forget how they came up with Triple D for this burger. All I remember is that it had a fried egg on it. And there's some friends of mine that if you put a fried egg on anything, they think it's next to godliness, so.
All right, well.
This is the same guy that put a fried egg on a schnitzel. I shit you not. Is traditional. I had no idea.
All right, well, we'll have to find out what the burger of the month is. Well, you will.
I will. I will post it to our Facebook feed.
Ooh.
As soon as I find out what it is.
Wonderful. All right.
There you go.
Now maybe we can actually get into comics. Now that we're almost 10 minutes into the show, we could actually discuss a comic book. That would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Hey, we talk about geek stuff, too. And what could be more geek than bacon?
I'm just saying, normally first we cover the comics, then we cover the geek.
Well, unless there's something important. This is important.
It's bacon. I understand. Yes. Well, to be fair, though, now science has given us many, many things, including bacon-flavored soda.
Indeed.
Yeah. Bacon-flavored ice cream.
Yes.
bacon in your chocolate.
Uh-huh. Bacon in your soap.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't they have bacon
soap? Yep, bacon soap. Well, not so much flavored. You're not going to eat the soap.
It's going to smell. It'll smell. Yeah. You'll smell like bacon all day.
So if your kid is cussing and you wash out their mouth with bacon soap, what kind of message are you really sending to them? I think there'd be some conflicting messages there.
I eat the soap.
All right. God have mercy on your soul. Alrighty.
All right.
Well, so, on that non sequitur, let's talk about Happy, because that's a book that really kind of flows right along with that.
It does kind of have a non sequitur right at the end of it, doesn't it?
About three quarters.
Yeah.
About three quarters in.
But, okay. So when I first picked up this book, I start reading it and I had to double check, because this is Grant Morrison mm-hmm. and Robertson, who did the art for the first part of the Boys series.
Yep.
And I'm picking this up and start reading, going, am I reading Warren Ellis? Am I reading Garth Ennis? Because for the language, there is a lot of cunts being mentioned in this book.
Yeah, just at the very beginning. After that, it's just fucking.
Actually, it starts off with that harsh language. It sets the tone right there, and I'm going, wait a second. Morrison is definitely shaking off for Marvel and DC, particularly for DC, and not being able to write with this language, because he blows it out right.
But from the overall tone of the book, I would be more willing to say that this feels more like something that would come from Millar.
It definitely changes halfway through the book. But it's
noir crime. It's that gritty crime book, which we've seen at least dozens of in the past year.
A Brubaker.
Yeah. That's the other name I was trying to think of.
Yeah. It certainly starts off that way. And I'm sure you're going to see the elements of that noir style carried through the rest of this book.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was just, you know, the way that this book started off with the characters talking to each other, it felt, you know, very much like
Pulp Fiction.
No, not even a Pulp Fiction, because there was more cussing in here than that.
Yeah, and there was less.
Part of it, I think, again, it made me feel that he was just trying to make up for so much time writing for DC and just, not being able to
get it all out at once,
like that. You know.
Yeah.
Here, let me just. I want to
throw a bunch of these in there.
Shit, fuck, cunt, piss.
Oh, so is Boondock Saints then?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. All right. There's a good analogy for you. but like I said, about three quarters of the way through this, that noir takes this very weird left turn.
Yes, it does. And that's one of the things that, yeah.
Do we want to say what it is, or do you want to leave it open for, you know, let's leave it open. Leave it open for people that actually want to go and read it, because I think that really would be a spoil if we talk about what it is.
But the main story arc is following a hitman as he sets up some people are actually
an ex-cop turned. Did he even turn hitman, or was he just being hunted?
No, he's turned hitman, and so he's got people that are out to kill him.
So he puts out a hit on himself, so that they'll come to him.
He's actually hired to kill some brothers. Puts a hit on himself and hires the brothers to come kill him,
right?
So that he can take them out instead of having to hunt them down.
Yeah, turkey shoot.
Yep. So, that's the basic premise of the beginning of this story, and when that hit goes wrong, that's when the story starts to...
sort of wrong.
When you get shot when you're taking somebody else out,
that's okay.
It goes wrong.
Yeah, that's wrong. All right, fair enough.
Okay, so a little bit of spoiler there, but that's not where the story... That's not what the left turn that the story makes, and it's really worth... No.
This is, from what it said on the cover, a four-issue mini. Yep. So, it'll be nice and short. It'll be, I think, a fun read.
Absolutely.
I would recommend, I'm not a big fan of that crime drama. I know you really, really are. Right. And this is one that I would think about going and picking up now this first issue and getting the rest as well, because this is going to be a fun ride. It's going to be fun, quirky, weird. So
while we were setting up for the show and I was doing a couple of things getting ready, you were reading this book. So you literally read this right before we did recorded this.
Mm-hmm.
And you were laughing. I caught you laughing several times throughout this book. So it's a funny book.
Mm-hmm.
And when it makes that left turn, it's still fun.
Well, it's the name of it is Happy, and that's how you'll feel reading it. So
yeah. It was a good book. All right.
Moving on. We did Image.
That was an Image book, smaller publisher.
You know, I'm going to...
Yeah, let's stay with a smaller publisher.
Okay. I'm good with that. Yeah. Then the next one we're going to talk about is Idolized from Aspen. This is the number two book in the series.
Yep.
This one, I want to say, probably will be a miniseries as well. Aspen tends to do that.
Yeah, they don't necessarily announce how many issues are going to be in the minis. Yeah. Yeah. They may allow some flexibility in that. That's why they don't do it, is they go, you know what, write your story. We'll plan on doing five. Oh, wait, you're going to do six?
You know what? Let me revise that. That's not entirely true. Because Aspen has Soulfire, which has been a long-running series, Fathom, all of the executive assistant books are all Aspen. So those have all been long-running series. So they do have ongoings.
They do, but a lot of them are also a mini of an ongoing, and then another chapter that they do.
Yeah,
later
they'll do.
They
do the volume by volume publishing style, and their releases are not always as timely as they should be, which has been a problem with Aspen, I know, in the past. Considering that this is a company that was created by a guy that's dead now and is still going with his original books and stories, is in a way kind of a testament to the people that are doing this, I think, more of a labor of love.
Yeah. Well, particularly when you get to the smaller publishers and even some of the stuff coming out of Image, mm-hmm. when it's creator-owned, those are done as labors of love of people that love this medium, mm-hmm. love the ability to tell stories.
And just really have a story that they want to tell.
Yeah. And so you get that. These stories don't sell, you know, once you get out of Marvel and DC, these are not high-selling books. There's very few mm-hmm. that are high-selling. There's very few that have long-running, ongoing, particularly continuous. Mm-hmm. And just about the two that I can think of that are continuous, long-running, are independents, Cerebus or Carabus.
Yeah.
The Aardvark and mm-hmm. Bone. Those are probably the two.
As far as like super long-lasting.
That have gone continuously ongoing.
Well, Bone ended.
Bone has ended. Yes.
Yeah.
But
Carabus, I think, still goes though, doesn't it?
But you pick that, if you pick up the Bone Omnibus, it's over 1,000 pages.
That's huge, ongoing. And there's also a side thing they did for Rose.
Both of those series went on for a long time, mm-hmm. as opposed to being the chaptered of, here's a 6-issue mini. Okay.
We're going to do another six-issue mini. Right.
Hey, look, we got another 6-issue mini.
That whole, paradigm shifted about 8 years ago or so, when they started realizing that the trades were selling a lot better than the issues. So when the publishing changes because it's just better business, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't hold it against them for writing to a style that's going to fit with their business model. I mean, that just makes sense.
Well, the other option is they could do, you know, they don't have to necessarily do 6 issues. They could do 7 and publish that as a trade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's books like The Long Halloween, which is a year-long arc that was published as one trade paperback. Mm-hmm. As a single trade. Now, maybe they've decided that because of the cost of what they're going to charge for a book, it's better to charge for a 6-issue trade than what they have to charge.
Yeah, maybe people
for
feel
12
like
issue people don't,
better value kind of thing.
Yeah, people are more willing to pay, they have to charge close to the same price for them because people aren't willing to pay double
or,
for
yeah,
12
or if you're judging like a 7 or 8 issue trade versus a 6-issue trade and you're just flipping it over, looking at the price on the back, and if you got one that's $19.99 versus one that's $25.99 or $24.99, you may just not have the money to do it, so you're going to get the smaller one.
And it's consistent,
I know I'm going to go in and buy a graphic, it's going to be $20.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's also the whole thing of, I got 12 issues, it's going to be $25, mm-hmm. versus I've got 6 issues, it's going to be $18, and here's the second 6 issues that made up that same trade at $18. Mm-hmm. They've now made $36 off of me instead of $25.
Yeah.
So there's the economies of that nature going on. Anyways, back
to say, at some part of all this, we need to actually talk about the book.
Oh, yeah. We were discussing Idolized, which we actually discussed this when it first came out. We both mm-hmm. were fans of it.
Yeah. I don't know if we were necessarily big fans, but we were curious to see where it was going to go.
It's certainly a new take on it. I think I was a little bit skeptical going into it mm-hmm. because the format of the book is an American Idol type competition.
In a world where superpowered individuals exist.
Where superpowered individuals are not rare, even more so.
Yeah, they're because, common.
Yeah, just like, you know, it's common to find somebody that can sing, it's common to find somebody that has superpowers
that
in
can
this world.
Throw so a Volkswagen.
They could actually have this show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because they show some of the producers talking backstage on who they think is going to make it or why, or who they need to give a push to.
Well, yeah, and that seems to be the bigger thing, is like how they're shaping the show. Because even the main character mentions how they call it reality television, but there's absolutely nothing real about it.
Right.
The people that are going into the final rounds are the people that the producers want to go in the final round because it will bring eyeballs.
Well, It even discusses that at the beginning, because the character lies to get on the show mm-hmm. about what her motivation is for joining the show, wanting to be on the show, wanting to train as a superhero.
Right.
So with that whole training change, yeah, it really is, you know, about that backstage show mm-hmm. of what goes on behind the show, like American Idol.
Yeah.
Where it's, you're not really seeing reality. And there's actually a wonderful point in here during one of the tests, as they decide who the finalists are that are actually going to be on the show.
Yep.
From that whittled down, just like American Idol, they show you the tryouts as they narrow it down to the ones that are actually in the competition.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that here, and they show how, you know, that competition is actually hacked and how the heroes fight and react during that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's good to show
a lot of it seems to be about what's behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting little bombshell that they drop at the end of this to try and get you to pick up the next issue. I don't necessarily think that hook was necessary to drag in, but it's because being already interested, it made me go, okay, where are they going to take this? Where are they going to take it?
And then they set that hook and it's almost like, oh, okay, that's where they're going to go next instead of leaving it hanging.
It still sets
the hook. I mean, it's still there, but it changes the tone of it, you know?
Well, part of the problem was the way they bookended it, because they bookend this at the very beginning of issue two. You start off in the future.
Right.
And you don't know how you got there, so they start telling you the story, but you never reach there mm-hmm. at any point during the telling of issue two.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that hook at the end is almost contrary to what you saw, so...
How are they going to bring it back in?
Yeah. It's a good story device. It's not bad.
And they make note of some additional resources at the end where they mm-hmm. kind of do like the Hollywood Reporter reporting on the show.
Which they did in the previous issue too, and I really liked, because they actually kind of set out who are going to be the major players and the producer's notes on each one of why they did or didn't like that particular
character. It helps to flesh out characters that, particularly in something that's a limited run series.
Yeah, to get you into them real quick.
You get to know who some of these characters are without having to sit there and spend an issue following each one, which is what you would have to do.
It shaves off a lot of the exposition from inside the story and just sticks there at the end for the people that want to read it. Because you can skip it and it'd be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. But it just develops the world more fully, which I love. So. Okay, I guess at this point we need to move on to...
Move to the majors. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of major, sort of not.
Yeah.
Well, the next one we want to talk about.
It is a major publisher.
It is a major publisher, but it's a property of a publisher that has been picked up recently. DC Comics, over the past, I want to say, 3 to 4 weeks, have been releasing books from National Comics. 3 weeks, excuse me. Because they have released Eternity, Looker, and this week was Rose and Thorn.
Yeah, so we both happened to pick up Rose and Thorn. It actually mm-hmm. had a cover that seemed interesting enough that we both randomly picked it up.
Yeah, and I actually did pick up the other two National Comics titles this week, but I haven't had a chance to read them yet.
Okay.
So what I want to do is I'm going to read, because we've reviewed or will be reviewing Rose and Thorn, I'm going to read the other two as well and give sort of an overall blanket review of all of the National Comic things that DC is coming out with.
Now, DC has owned the National Comics characters for a long time now.
Yeah, and they're just now finally doing something with
them. Well, some of them they're now finally doing something with. Like, Rose and Thorn, the characters that they're just putting out now have been B-listers. Some of them, like Uncle Sam, have been used in history.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not in the New 52, obviously.
Yep, they had a character, Mercury, who's I believe is now known as Johnny Quick. So there's
certainly... that was from National. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know the National Comics. I figured that was just an Earth 2 kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of the National characters
went in Earth 2.
Became the Earth 2 and part of the JLA.
JSA.
JSA, yes. Yeah.
Wildcat, I think, was a National Comic, wasn't he?
No, I don't believe Wildcat was.
Ah, damn. Here, I thought I was smart.
Yeah, I know.
I should have known better. So to talk about this, I would say let's start off with something that you said earlier this week, which is why you picked up in the first place, which was, this looks like a Jekyll and Hyde book.
It does.
And I'd be willing to say that's not an unfair assessment.
The cover of the book, which gives me that looking at it, mm-hmm. is a picture of a girl in a Catholic schoolgirl uniform getting dressed. She's pulling out her socks.
Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Looking in the mirror. In the mirror is reflected back a girl that's dyed her hair black, very much kind of a punk rock aesthetic.
Black lipstick, chain, just plain, like, steel chain necklace.
Yeah.
high boots, torn lots of fishnets. Buckles. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. And in the, and of course, you see the room is divided by the door. On the Catholic schoolgirl side, you've got the princess bed that looks like it could have, that's got the posts.
Little pink doily stuff. It's very girly.
Yeah, very pink girly. And inside the closet, you've got a pair of size, some nunchucks.
Yeah, lots of weapons and nasty things.
Yeah, looks like some brass knuckles, too, several guns.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
Yeah. So you're definitely getting the idea.
Right.
Two sides of the same coin here.
So what I want to say about this is while I was reading it, what this really gave me kind of a feeling of was Morning Glories is what this made me think of. And I would say if anybody...
I could see some elements, yeah.
Anybody that has heard a lot about Morning Glories, Mikey, I'm looking in your direction, and has been told that they need to get into it, but they know there's a lot of books out there. They don't want to jump into it right away and have to read to catch up. Go to your local shop, pick up this book. It's a one shot. It's a one and done. Read through this. And if by the end of this book, you say to yourself, wow, I'd like to know what happens next. The next thing you need to do is go back to your shop and pick up volume one of Morning Glories.
I'm not completely convinced by that analogy. Morning Glories is much more
It's cerebral. Deeper. Yeah.
It's deeper. The
It's the more lost aspect to it. But yeah, I still
the
think
that the double-sidedness of the characters is not there for everybody, and it's not nearly to this depth.
But I think this flavor translates well to that book. That if you like this flavor, you'll like that flavor. You know, if you like chocolate, you're gonna probably like, for the most part, Rocky Road. There's more stuff in it. There's more to it, but it's the same kind of basic idea.
And this also progresses a lot faster than Morning Glories. That's the other thing you got to watch out. If you're reading Morning Glories, it is slow to progress.
Mm-hmm.
So, this book, though, yeah, you definitely get introduced to the character who is very much that pink bedroom frilly girl, and she wakes up and has no idea what happened the night before.
Yeah.
So you kind of get the hangover effect of she's making her way through the day trying to figure out what the hell she did the night before.
Yeah. It dude, where's my car without the dumbassness?
Yeah. It's definitely not the stupid comedy that either of those movies are. Yeah. But it has that same play. I've even seen a Psych episode where they did it.
Well, yeah.
She's going through the day,
yeah,
and talking to somebody, and she'll go, I don't remember that. Can you tell me more about what I did last night?
Oh my God, you don't remember? Yeah, no, I don't. So,
which actually, had me kind of wondering where this was going to go because they had that whole dichotomy thing going on, how they were going to make that play. But you're getting through this, and you're going, it's getting pretty close to the end. How are they playing with this dichotomy?
Yeah. And while I should say, while it is a one and done, this certainly doesn't end with everything wrapped up in a neat little package.
Now,
it ends with a good explanation and with an understanding of exactly kind of what's going on, but it leaves it wide open for them to come back to this, which I'll say, I really hope they do.
I thought it was appropriate that it came out now when DC is putting out all of their Zero issues, because even as a one-shot, this could have been a Zero issue for the Rose and Thorn series.
Absolutely.
They may have even commissioned it as such and then decided to do something else as a series for the 52.
Well, I think...
And that's what... Maybe they...
I think DC has said that their third batch of new stuff is going to be coming out soon. Talon, I know, was part of the Zero issues, and that's another one of the new books.
They've already got new books coming out. Team 7, Talon, and...
What was the other one? Talon, Team 7, and there's something else. Phantom Stranger.
Phantom Stranger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've definitely got their new books coming, or already got their new series coming, the next rollout going on. This may have also just kind of been a trial, and I kind of wish...
I'm sure this is them dipping their toe in the water.
Already read the other national titles up.
Me too.
Because I'd like to see if they were also kind of done in this, here's a setup story arc.
This is a wild guess, but I have a feeling they probably are.
And if I remember correctly, there was a hint or two in here that this does in fact take place in the new 52 universe. And that these may be characters that we're going to be seeing. They're still beep players, but we may see them pop up a little bit as part of greater story arcs
yeah.
in the 52.
Yeah.
So I definitely would enjoyed it. It's a one shot. It's worth picking up and reading. It's not a whole lot of new ground that it treads, but it's a well told story.
Yeah.
Not only that, but I think if you buy this, it'll help keep the Leviathan alive.
Oh, geez. Really? You're going to go into that?
did you notice? Okay. For the readers that haven't been paying attention, last week in the episode you completely missed, and for I don't know how long before then, probably since we started the show, we've been discussing a book called Unwritten.
Yeah.
Unwritten features a character named Tom Taylor.
Yep.
Who has wounded a creature known as the Leviathan. The Leviathan eats stories.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in the current arc of Unwritten, Tom Taylor actually has to help heal the Leviathan by telling stories and creating stories.
Right.
Well, the writer of Thorn and Rose and Thorn, Tom Taylor.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. So good stuff.
It's I highly doubt that that's actually a pen name that they're using to tie into Unwritten. I think
Vertigo is DC. DC is National, but to tie it that close, no, I don't think it is.
No, I just think that's a fun joke.
That is entertaining. Last one that we were going to talk about for shared books this week is The New Dead Guardians, which this is number 7 of 8. We're coming up on the end of this one.
This is a Vertigo book.
Yep, it is a Vertigo book. We've talked about this one before, so not much to go back into as far as plot. I think this is wrapping up very nicely. We've had a couple of the big things that I've kind of been expecting to see at some point in this book have finally come up. A crowd coming after the main character because he's a vampire.
Yeah.
A zombie incursion into the civilized areas has, finally come
about. That would be a Zone B incursion.
Yes, it would.
Yes.
So the fun things are really starting to happen in this book, and for them to wrap it up in one more, I think is going to be a tight ship, but I don't think it'll be... It's far from impossible.
Work. Oh, yeah. I think it's going to work. I think it's laid out quite well. It's not going to be one of those where you go, okay, this should have ended, and then why are they continuing to bring something else in?
Yeah.
It's going to work out really nicely. It was properly paced for the 8 issues that they gave it.
Definitely.
This is the type of book, if you like kind of a period piece of, what did you say, 1920s-ish era?
This is Victorian era, so probably more likely...
Even older than that.
I would say probably just past turn of the century. So we're talking...
1910.
Well, they make allusions of... Kind of like World War One. So actually, maybe 1920s would be about right, because it's post-World War One.
Yeah,
because I thought there were some things... Their World War One is actually like the zombie war that they were in.
Yeah.
So it has that same type of the effect on the populace, where in World War One the romanticism of battle has been completely eliminated for wholesale slaughter.
Right.
And that's what kind of this character is, that same type of expat that was born from World War One.
And you can tell, because the character doesn't like war. He doesn't like fighting.
Yes.
Not
to say he can't do it, because he does lay some smack down in this book.
Yeah. Well, he's a soldier that doesn't like war. It's an archetype. Yeah. So if you're the type of person that's going to like a story in there, if you're watching Boardwalk Empire and you're liking that setting.
Like you are.
Yeah, I am watching Boardwalk Empire.
And liking the setting, I'm betting.
Well, but I'm just trying to give, for somebody that hasn't read this book, if you like horror and you like that 1920s feel, that roaring 20s, even heading into the gangster feel. Mm-hmm. Of, with the bootlegging and everything, this kind of sits in there. It doesn't have the gangster feel of that, but it's same era.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, manners are very important.
Yes.
Propriety, and you're throwing in zombies and vampires into that.
Yeah, so you have an aristocracy horror. That's now a unaging aristocracy.
Yeah.
That can truly last forever.
Yeah, it very much is, but it definitely has those elements of horror, but there's nothing scary about it.
There's nothing, nerve-wracking. There's no, feeling of suspense
horror,
on it.
To some extent, is a misnomer, even though it does have zombies and vampires in it, and the undead, it really doesn't, it isn't about scaring you.
They're not being used as monsters. I mean, the zombies kind of are, but they're not being used as monsters. They're just being used as another character of the story. So, I would definitely... I mean, this is more a mystery story. It's a good whodunit.
Yeah. So, that's another good point, is there is a whodunit involved in this. So, being that issue 8 is coming out now, you may not be able to find all the issues at your comic shop, but I'm sure this will be released as trade probably in 2 to 3 months.
I would think, with them having it only at 8 book run, mm-hmm. it would make sense to me that this should come straight out. And Vertigo's done that for most of their books anyways. Yeah. I can't think of any recently that has done a short run and finished and hasn't come out in trade.
Yeah, well, like we were discussing earlier, that's business model. Is you do an arc and then put it out in trade. If you do just a miniseries, you do it and you put it out in trade.
Yeah.
In this case, I'm sure it'll just be one trade because it's 8 issues. There's no reason to just support
that. No reason to go overboard.
All right. Couple of books I read that you didn't read this month. Mm-hmm. Going to start off with The Amazing Spider-Man. This is the last issue in the 3-issue arc featuring the sidekick hero Alpha.
Okay.
It's how Spider-Man resolves that issue. And the last panel indicates that Hobgoblin is going to be showing up next issue.
Mm,
so you got new arc coming up. This was
new arc, new bad guy.
694. So 695 will have a new arc, new bad guy. Dan Slott's been writing Spider-Man amazing. So.
Oh, wait. His writing has been amazing, or he's been writing the title Amazing Spider-Man?
Both.
Okay.
He's doing an amazing job of writing Amazing Spider-Man.
That's all I want to make sure of.
Okay. So, let you know that's coming up. Go ahead and pick that up. If you're a fan of Nick Fury, if you're a fan of him being a badass and showing it.
But not necessarily being Samuel L. Jackson.
No, the white Nick Fury, not the black one. They actually have,
nobody's perfect.
Marvel's had a Max series going out, Max being their adult content books, called Fury, written by Garth Ennis.
This is one that you tried to get me into, and I never bit onto it. It's the same noirish crime drama.
It has a lot of the noir, has a lot of the, it's a lot of the spy, and Fury working as a military liaison. It's not quite spy yet. Because he's a military liaison as opposed to an actual super spy.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, what did he do to cut his teeth? How did he get to where he got in command of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because he comes back from the war and is sent off to BFE because the commander didn't like him. So how does he get back from, being under the commander's, his officer's heels to earn his way up to being the Colonel Fury that we know and love as director of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Very fun.
And it's written by Ennis, so it's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is in the middle of an arc, right? Actually, no, it just ended an arc.
Okay.
So
and this is starting a new one.
Yeah.
Okay.
This arc dealt with the Bay of Pigs fiasco, and apparently he had a role in the Bay of Pigs. So.
Huh. Interesting.
I've been enjoying that, particularly if you like a James Bond-esque or a spy type story. You like the military from the enlisted man's point of view stories.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you got to jump over to DC now with a couple of 0 issues.
Yep.
First one is going to be Batman the Dark Knight. They got a new writer on here, which kind of...
Who's a new writer?
Greg Hurwitz, who made his kind of premiere in the annual, and now he's kind of doing an in-story origin for Batman. The writing has definitely improved on the Dark Knight with Greg Hurwitz taking over. Huge difference from I believe it was Tony Daniel that was doing the art and the plot before.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's going to be just doing art. But the writing is so much better now. Unfortunately, I did not like the story because I didn't like the origin that they told for Bruce.
Oh, okay.
And I think
Is that just a personal taste thing? Or do you think it's just overall bad and most fans won't like it?
I've been trying to fight with that because it's a well-told story. It's just not
the story you wanted?
He's driven for the wrong reasons. He has that pulled out from under him and things change. There was a neat little twist that they did. They did pull out the old Joe Chill card as the person that killed Bruce's parents.
Okay.
They had an interesting twist on that, which I did like, but everything leading up to that, I just felt was broken as far as the story of Bruce and the fact that he never leaves to go become Batman until the end of this, where he's almost at the age where he should be coming back as Batman.
Post-training.
This actually leads into, I believe it was Batman itself.
Okay.
The zero issue.
We could bicker and bitch about continuity again. But not even,
the only continuity issue I have with this book is there's a kid wearing a Superman shirt in the middle of it.
Okay.
So Superman hadn't appeared on scene.
That we know of.
Based on what we've been told, Superman didn't appear on scene until Batman had already been operating as Batman.
Right.
So, since he wasn't operating as Batman yet, hadn't gone off to Tibet, which is where the Batman Zero issue takes place. Yeah. Not necessarily in a perfect chronological order, but he doesn't go off to do his training until the end of this book. Yeah. He's doing traditional college and schooling stuff, which...
Yeah, we said multiple times before how they've been fucking this up, so it's not worth hashing over again.
I've always said Bruce left shortly after, as soon as he got out of primary school to start training.
Hmm.
Yeah. Which he's got the money to be homeschooled, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The other book that's a Zero issue is Superman Zero. This is taking over...
This is a writer change too, right?
Yeah, this is a writer change as well. Writer and artist change. Mm-hmm. And I'm completely drawing a blank. We mentioned it before the show. Dan Jurgens had been co-plotting and drawing the Superman.
Mm-hmm.
He's now off. They've put Scott Lobdell and Kenneth Rocafort on here.
Mm-hmm.
I know you recognize those two.
Yeah.
You enjoyed them for at least a while on Red Hood.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I hated Red Hood when I picked from the issue one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise that I hated this issue as well. Part of it was I felt I was being talked down to, and I cannot stand a book that talks down to me. That's why I don't like Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code or...
Same type of thing. Or it's Digital Fortress. Yeah.
If the author's talking down to me, I don't like it.
See, I figured you were going to say you weren't going to like this because they were going to turn Superman into a whore.
The giant hair flip and showing off his breasts was...
pecs. They're called pecs. Pecs.
So...
You just made a lot of fanboys very uncomfortable with that statement. You realize that, right?
Yes, I did. The way that they start off with the narration, mm-hmm. there's a big reveal at the end, which made me go, oh, well, at least I understand why they chose that narration perspective.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, this fucking blows. but aside from that, there was also the fact that they were being talked down to.
Yeah.
There were some interesting things that I actually went back and checked and there are a couple of things that look like they were taken out from, Morrison's run where he talks about Superman actually leaving Krypton. Yeah. Cause this deals with the story of this is Jor-El, a discovery of Krypton being doomed.
Okay.
I just felt it was very poor and it's probably leading into the current arc of Superman based on where this makes left sense. Off.
Yeah.
And I may give it one more issue.
That's one more than I'm going to give it.
You've already dropped it.
Yep.
So, last solo book I wanted to talk about, because I believe it's the end of the series, is issue 5 of Dancer by Nathan Edmondson, and Klein is on art. This was a fun little book. First issue...
You'd been enjoying this one for a while, if I remember correctly.
It's only 5 issues. It's not exactly a big book. It's from Image. Edmondson loves to do those military special ops type...
Yep.
And this is a story about a sniper who is dating a ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
When the ballerina gets kidnapped by himself. So he's got to figure out who he's fighting against that looks exactly like, is a younger version of himself.
Huh. Okay.
So that's what happens in the first book. So I'm not blowing the rest of the story.
Yeah.
It kind of has
when you explained that, I thought you were going a completely different path on that.
It has a Bourne-esque type of a feel of who am I? What is this?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's this organization that I'm dealing with? So if you like that kind of military thriller where you got the hitman / ex-military guy trying to figure out who his handlers are or why they've come back after him.
Okay.
That should be out in trade soon if you can't find all the issues. It's 5. I don't think there's going to be more. It seemed to wrap up nice and tight here.
Okay.
He could always come back and do another 5-issue mini.
Well, yeah. Well, I think that's what it would story have to be. And you can extend it out if you find, if you want to fluff something, you can fluff something. I mean, shit, we've written enough college papers to know how that's the truth. You know, yay, I'm finally done. Oh, wait, I need 2 more pages. Time to shovel in the bullshit. You know, it can happen.
Who can I quote for this?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Anything you read outside of the
I do. Books? I have some, I had a few solo books that I read this week. I still have a big stack that I need to get to, and I'll get probably into more of those next week. But before I say anything else, I need a sip.
Really? You had to do the nice redneck salute right in the middle there.
Yes, I did. Okay. First one to talk about is JL Dark. This is being written by Lemire, who's been doing the Dark series so far. I've been on record before saying that I don't particularly like Lemire's stuff, which is too bad because he always seems to come out with things, and actually, I should mention.
Well, what you've said is you like his stories, you don't like his writing style.
Yeah, that's definitely, and there was something in this that I pegged on that made me understand why I didn't like it, but I should mention as well, Lemire is the writer of Eternity, one of the other national comics that I'm going to be reading and reviewing coming up. So we'll see if it stays true for that one as well. What happened in this book was there was some, not dialogue box, but the caption boxes that were explaining the situation, giving some exposition. And then they go over to the dialogue, and the dialogue felt at least almost verbatim what was just said in the context boxes. So it's sort of like, oh, you know, here's a situation. We thought we were fucked. And then they have the conversation. Hey, guess what? I think we're fucked.
And it wasn't done for the comic effect of that.
No, it was. It felt like
occasionally you'll see that. And usually it is the, oh God, we're fucked. And then you see the character going, oh God, we're fucked.
Yeah, no, but this was more along the lines of, it was the context was being told from a current point of view, and the story is in the past. It's a flashback. So he was explaining it, and then the dialogue just matched to basically corroborate what was being said.
He couldn't figure out what zone he was in for telling, was he telling it in the past?
No, honestly, I think he just needed to fill out dialogue. I think he had an extra page that he had nothing to go there, so he's like, fuck, okay, I'll just repeat it.
Yeah.
It was.
Unfortunately, that doesn't quite work as well as it does in college papers, so, just by adding dialogue, because they appear on the same page.
Exactly.
He didn't know whether he was showing you or telling you. Showing us is when the character says it.
And
telling
instead he tried to do both at the same time tells us. Twice. Yeah. So anyways, moving on, another Zero issue from this week was Aquaman. This is a fantastic origin story. Well, a sort of a point origin story. This goes from the death of Arthur's father to him actually getting to Atlantis to become the king. Okay. Fun run, cool, written by Geoff Johns. So, I mean, his stuff is pretty middle of the road, good stuff. The next Zero issue is Firestorm. This is, in fact, very weird because it's not a Zero issue. It is a Zero issue, and my pronunciation on that was kind of fucked up, but I don't care. The story so far leading up to this has been of Jason Rush and Ronnie Raymond each being a Firestorm in their own right, but they had different power sets between the two. Rush could do the transmutations, and Raymond could do the big fiery blasts and stuff. And they would join together to create this thing called Fury, hence the Fury of the Firestorm, which is what the real title of this book is. At the end of their major arc that just ended coming into the Zero issue, all of the Firestorm protocols across the globe, because there's a whole bunch of them, all basically got shut down, knocked out, gone. Okay.
So that was issue 12.
Right. So they have been depowered. In this issue, they're both beginning to realize their powers are starting to come back a little bit. And we know that there was something special about the Firestorm protocol that created the two of them, because it's the one that came directly from Professor Stein. All these other ones came from this other company, Zyrtec, that basically had reverse engineered his idea and created and mass marketed these Firestorm protocols that were all these kind of knockoffs.
Oh, so basically what you're saying is the two main characters are the iPod or the iPhone. And all the rest are the Samsung Galaxy knockoff phones.
If the Samsung Galaxy exploded next to your head and blew your brains out, yeah, that would be an description.
Okay, so they're not exactly stable when they get their power.
Well, no, they basically gave a bunch of these generic Firestorm protocols out to a bunch of organizations in the Middle East and created literal suicide nuclear bombs.
Okay.
The story leading up to this, the 12 issues before the Zero, I felt was an excellent story. And a lot of people gave a lot of crap. In fact, Van Ivers, that's not his name though, the artist, that was Geoff Johns.
Van Sciver?
You think Van Sciver? Yeah, Van Sciver. He actually left the book because he didn't like the direction that it was going.
I thought he's still on the book. I thought Gail Simone was the one that left.
Was it Gail that left?
Gail left. Gail was still plotting it with him.
Yeah, it was one of the two, and I liked it. I like where they're going with it. Anyways, to get back to the book, the two of them are getting their powers back, and it's now going to the traditional Firestorm that we know, where it's the two people joining together. One is the physical, one is the mind, and they have to work together to be this hero. So it is now a Zero issue in the sense that it's the origin of the Firestorm that we know. And they brought it to, this is where he is.
I wonder if that was a design, or if they were like, we want to try and create the character this way. Let's see if it plays.
We have a way to bring it back. I don't know if that's the case or not, but that seems to be a good foil for them to have done it that way. Yeah. So
But like you said, you liked it kind of with the split of each has its own, and then they kept and planted into the one that has both.
I liked the concept of it because it was more than just them. They could do it with other firestorms as well. Right. What I liked about the book was the quasi-national view or global view of what happens when this weapon is mass-produced and put out into the world. And the global effect that it has, not only just as far as the powers, but politically. But anyways, where this will go from here, it's going to be a real toss-up at this point of, is it going to be worth following, or is it going to fall into every other Firestorm book that's ever been created before this one, which traditionally have had short runs and get canceled? The best thing that Firestorm ever did was in Identity Crisis when he got killed. Like, that was the best. There was the Blackest Night thing, too. That was kind of cool. Anyways, last solo book that I did was the Star Trek The Next Generation, Doctor Who crossover, Assimilation 2, which has been ongoing in IDW. It's still continuing to be cool. As a little throw out there for all the geeks that follow one side or the other, the Borg are now being systematically destroyed by the Cybermen. And the Doctor is trying to tell Picard, I know you hate the Borg, and I know you're saying let the Cybermen just wipe them out, we'll clean them up after the fact, but if we let the Cybermen go, they're going to become more and more powerful, and there isn't shit we're going to be able to do to stop them if we don't stop them now.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend scenario. Recruit the Borg to help you before they're gone.
So basically, the Doctor is trying to tell Picard, look, you got to put your ship behind you. You have to make an alliance with the Borg, because that's the only way we're going to be able to stop
them. Okay, Picard, let me put this in terms you can understand. You're the United States and the United Kingdom. The Borg, they're Russia. The Cybermen, they're Germany.
Yeah, Picard wouldn't understand that. This is way too far.
He's a student of history. He understands.
Well, yeah. Riker probably would understand it more. Anyways, okay. So that was all my solo stuff from all the solo stuff that I've read really, so far this week.
So you're really enjoying that TNG it Doctor is. Who it's, mashup?
It's been a lot of fun. I mean, I'm a quasi Doctor Who fan, or excuse me, a quasi TNG fan. My wife more so than I ever was. But I'm a big Doctor Who fan. In fact, I just today finally purchased the Season 7 Part 1 on iTunes of Doctor Who.
Had to get that in, didn't you? You had to get that.
Damn right. Well, I cut the cord, so I can't watch it on TV, so I had to figure out another way to get it. And
was it available yet on Netflix?
Right. And I wasn't going to wait, because I'm an impatient bastard.
Gotcha. You're an impatient bastard. Okay, fine.
As a quick thing as far as patience... A neat little kind of geeky thing I should mention real quick. I'm going to start getting into homebrewing.
Ooh.
Yeah. I got two kind of starter kits from Williams & Sonoma for a birthday. And I'm just now, I think, finally at a point where I understand the process well enough that I can start really trying to do it. I'm going to try a wheat beer first. I have a Hefeweizen that is going to be the first one out of the gate. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. So
I'll have to keep you appraised on that one.
So You're going to basically just have giant buckets of stuff fermenting in your in a deep, dark closet somewhere in your house.
That's actually going to be the hardest part, is I have to find a place in my house that's going to be cold enough to keep it under 75 degrees. Because under 75, between, I think it's 60 to 75 is the ideal temperature for yeast to do their...
work?
Yeah, to live and screw and make carbon dioxide and make alcohol. So I need... And my house is usually a balmy 78, and... That's throughout the entire thing.
And you usually need, it also used to be someplace dark, doesn't it?
Doesn't have to be. No. It well, helps.
Instead of being in a dark, you're keeping them in a dark container though, right?
Yeah. The light getting onto it doesn't really make a difference other than the fact that having light, or having at least sunlight hit it can warm it up and it'll end up taking it outside of that zone. So right, it's just temperature control more than anything else.
So you'll be running your air conditioner a bit more just so you can brew.
Either that, or I'm thinking what I might do is actually get a cooler. And put my, because it's only a 1 gallon fermentable jug, I can drop that in and just put some water around it and drop in a couple ice cubes here and there and just do a regular check on the temp to keep it in that zone.
Gotcha. So.
All about temp control. If anybody else has done home brewing and you hear this, by all means, give me ideas. Especially, we live in Florida. This crap is not easy to do in Florida.
Yeah, because you're either running your air conditioning all the time, which is expensive in Florida.
Granted, we are coming into fall, so the temperatures will be dropping. It'll be getting to the point where maybe I can just leave it on the back porch if the temperature is right. So.
Yeah, if you wait till December to start, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I'll do saisons the entire time, and that's no fun.
Yeah, and who wants to wait till December to drink? So.
Amen.
I'm not going to be drinking it anyways. You're not brewing anything hard enough.
Yeah, no, because that, in fact, I think is still illegal, at least in Florida.
Yeah. Sorry, no stills going in.
There are other states that's legal, though. I looked that up.
Well, I was tempted to try and replicate the mash still.
Yeah,
The one from the tent by Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah.
Replicate that thing. I'd make some gin.
Ooh, yep. Bathtub right. Gin. Bleh. We should mention, last thing we need to say, as you may have heard at the top of the show, we did in fact change our intro, and that is because we are not going to be doing the show weekly anymore. We're switching to a 1st and 16th release schedule.
So that we're going to be able to double up on the books. It gives us a wider range of books to have read to be able to bring to you. It means that we'll have had usually had more of a chance to read the books that have just come out.
Point in case, I've stacked this week.
Yeah, so that we can actually get you accurate reviews.
And also kind of bring you more of the creme de la creme of what we're hitting every week, too. Because if we read something and it's fresh in our minds, it may feel really good. But then the next week after, we kind of go, hey, maybe it wasn't as good as I thought. So this way, we'll be able to get you the real good stuff.
Or the real bad stuff if it's something we need to warn you of.
Yeah, as the case may be.
Like the Lobdell Rocafort Superman.
Yep.
So, hopefully we'll have better discussions on that. It'll have a chance to find, more news stories, more geek chic stuff to discuss, whether it's homebrewing or
whatever other,
or bacon, as we've discussed this episode.
Bacon.
So, or the Amazing Randy.
Right. Yeah, we're going to mention that.
The Amazing Randy has led an amazing, wonderful life.
Yeah.
As if you couldn't tell by his.
And the guy's in his, what, 90s?
I don't know if he's 80s or 90s.
He's got to be
90s. He's actually got a foundation.
He's a magician.
Yeah, he's a magician, and he, in the tradition of many magicians such as Houdini, he's spent a lot of his time debunking frauds.
Yeah.
Howard Thurston was another one. But the Amazing
Randy. Well, even modern day Penn Jillette is just as much of a skeptic.
Penn and Teller both.
Yeah, skeptics.
Yeah. Penn does the talking for Teller.
Yeah.
They're both the skeptics. And they're very active with skeptics. They have a documentary coming out on James Randi called An Honest Liar.
Yeah.
Because that's what magicians are. They are liars.
They're going to tell you that they're lying to you.
And they tell you that right up front. Yeah. They're going to lie to you.
And then they do.
Yes. There's a saying that magicians are the most honest men in the world because they tell you they're going to lie to you and then they do.
Yeah.
So.
Which I would dare say lawyers kind of fall into that category too.
No, lawyers a lot of times don't tell you they're bothering to lie to you. It's just assumed because they're lawyers that they're lying.
Well, yeah. And actually, truth be told, the lawyers, same thing, are never in fact actually lying to you. They very much toe that line, but they don't flat out lie. They're not allowed to.
They didn't tell you that. They avoided saying it. So, anyways, back to James Randi.
Yeah.
They're doing a documentary on his life about how he,
He busted the...
There are psychics that he busted.
Yeah, I was going to say Jerry Falwell, and that's not it.
No.
It was another religious guy who had...
Yeah.
It was the over-the-air explaining... He was doing faith healing, and it was a bunch of bullshit because he was getting to it in his ear.
Faith healers, psychics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yuri Geller, I think, had a big thing. Like, he was wanted to get into a fist fight with the Amazing Randi over this.
Probably because, Randy's the type of guy that would ruin a guy like Yuri's career.
Yeah.
And I believe they actually, talked with Yuri for this documentary. It's been in process for a while. Of course, Penn and Teller are in here.
Many magicians. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's very influential both in that community and the skeptic community.
I want to say he's actually, I don't know if it's like a Hall of Fame type thing, but he was, I believe, president of the Magicians Guild for many, many years.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. He was president of the Magicians Guild. So.
There's an interview of the Amazing Randi done by, I want to say, Stephen Colbert, I think, or it may have been NPH. I forget which, but it's an interview done at the Magic Castle. If you can find it on YouTube.
NPH is also a magician, actually. A lot of people don't realize that. Not only is he
the current president of the Magicians Guild.
Yes. And of course, member of the Magic Castle, which is a club for
magicians. He's president of the Magic Castle, not of the
magicians.
Well, it's the same thing,
no.
I think.
No, okay. Magic Castle is its own thing. It is a private club for magicians.
Yeah.
Although people such as Johnny Carson were members, and Johnny had his own stool, was a regular there.
Oh, yeah.
But Randy, they're actually about to be putting this, the biography movie, they're going to be doing a Kickstarter campaign for it.
Oh, okay.
Which is going to be starting soon. So keep your eyes open. If you're into Kickstarting stuff, if you're into supporting documentaries.
This would be a good one to go for.
This would be a good one to go for.
Another good one to go for that I know is out there is the D&D documentary, which I think they're doing a Kickstarter for that too.
Yeah, they're doing a Kickstarter for the history of D&D, talking about Gygax and the origins of the game and his contributions. And the controversies about, Gygax deal it or not.
So. The whole deal with TSR and going to Wizards of the Coast, the whole spiel.
Yeah, so.
Which.
If you go to Kickstarter, search for D&D documentary. That one's already up there. And Honest Liar will be up shortly. They don't believe they've launched that yet, but they will. So if it's something that you're interested in, you can also go to an honestliar.com. If you do a search for an Honest Liar,
you'll find it.
You can find some more information about James Randi. Yeah. Randi Educational Foundation is a skeptical society. They hold the seance for Houdini every year to see if Houdini's coming back.
A bunch of skeptics doing a seance?
Absolutely. Because that would be the ultimate proof.
Oh, yeah, good point.
The afterlife, Houdini, the ultimate escape artist, had said, if there's a way to escape death and come back,
I'll do it.
I will do it. And so every year on the anniversary of his death on October 31st.
Oh, on Halloween, okay.
Yeah, which is the day Houdini died.
Which I'm going to find it really funny if Houdini did find a way to escape death, but it happened at like April 14th. And they've just been looking on the wrong date the entire fucking time. And Houdini's on April 14th going, where the fuck are you guys?
No, he said, I think there were specific instructions. He actually left coded.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe there's rules that he didn't know about until he got there. So he left these instructions and now the rules are changed. He's like, God damn it.
The reason we have Halloween is because it's the day that the ghosts can come to Earth.
That's our own superstition. That's our own superstition. That has nothing to do with what the cosmic rules might actually be.
Okay.
I mean, this is the same God that said an obedient and beautiful woman can be found in every corner of the world, and then made the world round and laughed and laughed and laughed.
All right. Keep your bad jokes to yourself.
Yeah.
All right.
It was funny on Facebook.
Notice where you said it was funny.
Yeah,
and then realize why it's not funny.
Oh no, I know damn well. That's why I put it out there. Anyways,
Only thing that's funny on Facebook are the people who don't realize that they're being stupid, not the people who think they're being funny.
Mm.
All right. Unless there's anything else you have to say, I think it's about time we got out of here.
There's always more things I could say. Just at this point, they probably wouldn't be a good idea.
Okay, then we're going to go ahead and get out of here. We're going to let you guys go. If you want to get a hold of us, let us know how you feel about us changing up to twice a month. Yeah, let us know what you're enjoying about the show, what you're not enjoying about the show, how we can improve it.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, get a hold of us. All of our contact information is available at about.me/comicbooktesseract. That's got our email address. That's got our Facebook page. That's got our G+ page if you want to get us a hold of us through social networks.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to email us, the email's there. If you want to call us, we've got a phone number. You can call us. You can leave a voicemail. You can text us. So we've made ourselves available. Let us know. Go ahead and review us, whether you're on iTunes, you get us through iTunes or any other program. Review us. Let us know. Let others know what you think about the show. If it's positive, go ahead and put it out there. If it's negative, let us know, because it's probably something we can fix.
Yep.
And we will, work to make the show better. We can only do that if you let us know.
Unless you have dumbass opinions, in which case, screw you.
Yeah. So anyways.
Yes, antagonizing our fan base. Oh, there is one more thing I should go ahead and mention quick before we get out of here.
Wait, one more thing. Steve Jobs? Yes?
I'm not wearing a turtleneck. Don't even. In the coming episodes, there's a very high likelihood we are going to have other speakers on with us as well.
Yes.
We started talking to some other good friends and buddies and people just around and about, guys from the comic shop and other friends that collect comics. We're going to start actually getting more and more people on the show to bring in some other different viewpoints, some different opinions. So be looking forward to that in the coming episodes as well.
Absolutely. Get some more opinions on here on what you should be reading. Plus, that spreads out the base, gives you more things to know about.
Oh, yeah.
As to what's good or not.
Because they read shit that we don't, so.
Yeah. All right. So, till you hear from us next time when we step back inside the Tesseract.